get ready for a brand new season of Sports Talk. Join Ian Levenstein, Jason Green, Joey Maggs, and all the rest on The Sporting Goods. Mondays from 3 to 4 on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. It's all part of the 5-Hour Sports Block on Mondays.
Fellow geek brethren, you have come to the right place for all of your gaming, gadgets, technology, anime, video games, comic books, and anything else you can think of. It is Geek Speak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, live from Brooklyn, New York, Ian Levenstein.
Everybody, my name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. And of course, we are podcasting at speakgeekspeak.com. This is episode 34 of the Geek Speak podcast, and I have some excellent news to announce on today's show. For those of you who have not realized yet, I have myself a second podcast. That's right. Comic Timing is the name, and it focuses basically upon comic books as a whole for the fan that might not nearly be into comic books as much as everybody else in the comic book world. So that is located over at speakgeekspeak.com/comic timing. It is on iTunes now, so if you do a search for Comic Timing, you will be able to find it. And it's on Podcast Alley as well, so give it a vote over there. So once again, it's speakgeekspeak.com/comic timing. And also, the forums have had a revamp, including a Comic Timing forum on there as well. Anyway, that's for the news portion. Now let's get into the actual show. And we're going to start things off here with some news on Nintendo. Obviously, anybody who is on the internet knows about the change of the Nintendo Revolution to the Nintendo Wii! And I gotta tell you, it's quite possibly the worst name change in the world. I will get into that, certainly, on today's show. Also, the fact that E3 is up and running, and already it has been announced that Activision has acquired one of the biggest video game licenses out there. Which one is it? Well, I'll let you know as this show rolls on. Tech news, Mozilla has officially patched their Firefox flaw, which got discovered about a week ago. And finally, Firefox version 1.503 has been released, and it covers that flaw. And I'm going to have some takes on that and how Mozilla always seems to get those out there so much faster than Microsoft does. Also, for fans of VoIP, it looks as if there will be a VoIP solution available for the Nintendo DS and the PSP in the near future. What does this say for people who might be in need of a cell phone and yet really don't want to buy one? Well, it might say some pretty damn good things about that. And also, even though I have a comic book podcast now, it does not mean I will not cover comics on this show. I'm going to have a bit of a, well, I guess you can call it a mini rant on all those damn crossovers that are running around comic books these days, whether it's actually good or bad. I'll get into that on today's show. But let's start things off with the big news, and that, of course, is the Nintendo Wii. Well, for months now, Nintendo has been advertising its brand new next-generation system, which was codenamed the Nintendo Revolution, and all signs pointed to the fact that it would be the Nintendo Revolution for the foreseeable future. However, for those people who remember, a little while back, there was a rumor that Nintendo was going to change its name of the console to something different, and for a while there, it was Nintendo Go, and that was proven to be false, and now we have the Nintendo Wii, which has been confirmed. What the hell was Nintendo thinking with this name? I gotta say, you know, a lot is said within a name. I mean, with Wii, what do I think of? I think of going to the bathroom. That's what I think of. I think of, we don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. I think of people as a whole, obviously, because that's what we are. But I really don't think too much of a gaming system. And this is what Revolution, well, I guess soon to be we.ign.com, but it's still Revolution for now. revolution that IGN.com had to say about the Nintendo Wii. And this happened on April 27th. So it's a bit of an old piece of news, but it came out after my last show, so I'll talk about it now. Nintendo revealed this morning, well, obviously on April 27th it was this morning, now it's not this morning anymore, that the official name of its formerly codenamed Revolution system is Nintendo Wii. The Big N explained the decision behind the name in a statement, which we provided below. Introducing Wii, as in Wii. While the codename Revolution expressed our direction, Wii represents the answer. Wii will break down that wall that separates video game players from everybody else. Wii will put people more in touch with their games and each other. But you're probably asking, Mr. Guy, what does that name mean? Well, what does it mean? Wii sounds like Wii, which emphasized the console is for everyone. Wii can easily be remembered by people around the world, no matter what language they speak. Wii. Well, guess what? If they speak French, it means yes. Nintendo, yes, anyone? Oh, yeah. No confusion. No need to abbreviate. Just Wii. Wii has a distinctive E spelling. And, of course, is II. I just had to put the E in there. That symbolizes both the unique controllers and the image of people playing it. And Wii, as a name and a console, brings something revolutionary to the world of video games that sets it apart from the crowd. So that's Wii. But now Nintendo needs you, because it's really not about you or me. It's about Wii! And together, we will change everything. Oh my God! I really wish I was making that speech up. That was the official press statement for Nintendo. What a load of bullcrap. Okay. You could tell that Nintendo probably had this name in the works a long time back. The patent actually dates back to November. That's when they originally put it in. But it was dated April 27th, the day that this first came out. It was in the works, and they finally got the patent done the day that they announced the Nintendo Wii. Now, this happened before. Okay, back in the days of the Nintendo 64 was a Nintendo Dolphin, all right? Something that I've covered in the past when everybody thought it was going to be Nintendo Go for a while. I liked the name Dolphin, and I was probably in the minority there, but I really, really liked the name Nintendo Revolution. Because the name Revolution, what does that say to you? Well, first of all, Revolution speaks change. It speaks new direction. It speaks innovation. And that is exactly what Nintendo is trying to do with their controller and their system. They're trying to put something brand spanking new out there, something that no one has ever seen before. Do you know what WII says to me? They forgot one of the W's. All right, that was bad of me. No, Wii doesn't say anything to me. All it says is a misspelling. And I hate misspellings, by the way. I really hate when people think that they're so freaking cool that they can spell, you know, revolution with two V's, or if they can spell course with a K, or what spell W-U-T, or U just spelled with a U. It really doesn't work for me. That's probably one of my main issues here with Wii. It's W-I-I. It means absolutely nothing other than this game system. But, you know, a lot of people are going to just think of W-E when they see this. They're going to think, why did Nintendo name their system after a large group of people? I guess they want to think of the togetherness that Nintendo fans have had over the years, the way that Nintendo fans stick together and stuck through the bad years of the GameCube until finally the GameCube came into its own. And when everybody thought that the DS was just a gimmick with their second screen and now they're the best portable console on the market, I guess that's what they're trying for here, but I really don't know if they're going to succeed. Like I said, the name means everything, and I really don't understand their choice here, because Revolution, sure, it was a bit long, but you could call it the Rev. That's pretty easy. Nintendo Rev, Nintendo Revolution. There's no point to it. There really isn't. But again, this is Nintendo for you here, okay? They like changing their names, okay? They like going with a production name and then switching it off, because it's happened before and it'll probably happen again. Does this mean that people are going to start thinking any different of Nintendo? Well, you know, it very well might, because there are some people out there who will buy something if it just seems appealing. What is appealing about the word Wii? Not much. What's appealing about a revolution? It sounds like change. I can't make that clearer. We just sounds like nothing. And I might just be going a bit too far here because, well, maybe a name is just not nearly as important as I think it is. But, you know, when I heard it was going to be called Xbox 360, I didn't think much of that either because, well, 360, what's up with that? 360 consoles available? That's pretty much what was the case when the Xbox 360 first came out. What do I think of PlayStation 3? I think PlayStation needs to stop making things called PlayStation. I think Sony, it's about damn time to change the name of your system. I guess maybe that's something you could say about the Nintendo. Other than the Super NES and the Nintendo 64, I guess. Well, you can't really, I guess you can call it that. They've done a decent job of switching around the names. They've done a decent job of keeping things fresh in people's minds. You know, keep the Nintendo brand on there and then change up what people are expecting. And they are going to be changing up what people expect with the Wii. But I think they would have done a much better job with Revolution. Will we as a people buy this? Will we as a people run to the stores and purchase this brand spanking new system? Well, again, it's still going to be the cheapest system out there. That's what it has going for it. It's still going to have a interesting new controller design. That's what it has going for it. It just doesn't have a name going for it anymore. The logo, from the looks of things, it's going to be a W with two of those controllers and a dot on top of both of those controllers, which I guess is sort of creative. But even with the idea of the Nintendo Wii, it's going to take me a while. It really is. Because I was set on Revolution. You know, when a system's about 4 or 5 months away from being released, you would think that they had made up their mind on what the hell it's going to be called. Well, I guess Nintendo just likes playing with our heads here. Meanwhile, the DS Lite is finally going to be released here in the US, which is a plus because people have been having to import their DSs from Japan, and there's already a shortage of DSs in Japan in the first place, so it's been very difficult to get a hold of any of those. Well, now they're finally going to be released here for a lower price point than the original Nintendo DS. It's sleeker, it's better in design, so maybe Nintendo does have the right idea here. Maybe they're going for those sleek designs with interesting names. DS, dual screen. Hey, that makes sense. Wii doesn't sound anything like anything, but what are you going to do? I don't know. Maybe you guys like it better than I do. If you do like it, let it be known on the forums or in email, because maybe I'm just completely wrong here, or maybe I'm entirely right, but all I have to say is Wii kind of sucks, and anything that can be mistaken for a bodily excrement is probably not a good idea for a name, don't you think? It's Firefox patch time. You know, about once a week, well, maybe not once a week, or maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks, Firefox has a brand new patch out there for its browser. How often does Internet Explorer come out with a patch? I would have to say somewhere between never and ever. That's probably the best way to put that. Internet Explorer, when they find a flaw, it usually takes them at least two to three months. When Firefox finds a flaw, when Mozilla finds a flaw, it's out there, out the door within a couple of weeks, and I love that about it. 1.5.03 just got released, and here is the news out of PCWorld.com. Version 1.503 of the browser is now available, patches a known security bug. Mozilla has released an update to its Firefox browser, fixing a known security flaw in the open source software. The bug reported last week relates to the way Firefox handles JavaScript code. It could be exploited by attackers to crash an unpatched browser, and in theory, could also provide them with a way to trick the browser into running malicious code, Mozilla said in a security alert. The problem has to do with an error caused when Firefox handles certain unexpected content window.focus JavaScript code. It can be circumvented by disabling Firefox's JavaScript handling capabilities. Users of the older Firefox 1.0 browsers and the Mozilla Suite 1.7 are not affected by the flaw, and Firefox 1.5 users should soon start to receive software patches under the browser's automatic update system. Mozilla developers said last week that they had reduced the number of features in 1.503 update in order to speed up the release of this security fix. Release notes for the 1.503 browser can be found at mozilla.com/firefox/releases1.503.html. And apologies for my voice, as it sounds like I am dying. All right. Again, Firefox finds a mistake in their browser. What do they do? They patch it. This was only a problem with 1.5. So for those of you who are still running your older Firefox, I don't know why you would be, but I guess some people are more happy with the 1.07. You're good. 1.07, you're perfectly fine. And again, that was a very stable release of Firefox back then. There are a couple features that are unavailable in that. That's why I went to 1.5. And also, I like being modern with my browsers. But every now and then, there will be a mistake, even with these brand spanking new versions. And that's my problem with IE7 as well, because I will guarantee you that with as many bug fixes as they are putting into IE7, whether in beta form or in the final form, there will be just as many brand new problems to deal with inside of this software. It's bound to happen. Microsoft is known for its mistakes. They'll fix them, sure, but not in time to save everybody. Because again, half the time, they don't know what's wrong. Half the time, they'll go in there and be, we're turning to our users for assistance in this. Yeah, that's great. You're the company. Okay, you're the ones that are supposed to know exactly what the hell is going wrong with your software at all times. And yet, really not the way things go for Internet Explorer. Fantastic. Mozilla, they have a great idea of things. Every single week, they prove time and time again why I like them so much. And again, I know I sound like all I'm doing is just shilling Firefox here. I understand that. I apologize if I am just sounding like a dude who's promoting Firefox. But there's reasons to. There really is. This is one of them. Because how often do you see a company admitting that they have a problem and fixing it immediately, abandoning other updates they were going to do just to make sure that their browser is safe? The enhancements can wait as long as people are secure. Firefox does this. Microsoft does not. And speaking of Microsoft, they've got problems of their own. And my first story coming from my new podcasting partner over at Comic Timing and still a regular supporter of GeekSpeak. And I got to thank him 8,000 times for helping us out with Comic Timing. He will be a regular on that. He will be one of the three with myself, Toby Cook, and of course him, David Price, over at Comic Timing. Here is his first contribution of the night on GeekSpeak. David Price, thank you, my friend. Coming out of CNN.com, Microsoft may delay Vista again. Hey, guess what? I called it. Microsoft Corporation's long-awaited release of the upgrade to its flagship Windows operating system will likely be delayed again by at least 3 months, researchers group Gartner Incorporated said on Tuesday. The research note, released to clients Monday, said the new Windows Vista operating system is too complex, gee, what a shock, to be able to meet Microsoft's targeted November release for volume license customers and January launch for retail consumers. A Microsoft spokeswoman said the company disagreed with the Gartner report and it was still on track to meet its launch dates. Vista is the first major overhaul of its operating system, which sits on 90% of the world's computers and accounts for nearly a third of Microsoft's total revenue since Microsoft's rolled out Windows XP nearly 5 years ago. Microsoft originally targeted a 2005 release for the new Windows, then pushed the release out to 2006 before announcing in March that Vista would again be delayed to improve the product's quality. Gartner targets a Windows Vista release in the April-June quarter of 2007, 9 to 12 months after Microsoft conducts a second major test or beta release for Vista during the current quarter. So what does this say? Well, yet again, Microsoft has tried to do too much at one time. What a freaking shock. They can never time themselves properly. They don't know the idea of do things one after one after one. It's always five at once for them. That's how they do their releases for IE. You know, Internet Explorer could have been improving itself over time, but instead, they're cramming it all into IE7. There could have been a IE 6.5. There could have even been an IE 6.3. You know how easy it would have been to just add tabs onto IE6? I'll tell you how easy it is. A lot of browsers did it. A lot of people in their homes took the code for IE6 and made browsers using the IE engine, only adding tabs to it. Microsoft could have did that themselves. But no, they figured, let's wait until IE7 to do this all at once. Well, now they're doing it with their operating system. Big shock. They could have released patches for XP. They could have made a Service Pack 3 to XP with a lot of the changes that they're going to make in Vista just to try it out there, just to see how it rolls. Instead, Service Pack 3 has been pushed back to the middle of 2007. If Vista is pushed back, God only knows how much Service Pack 3 will be pushed back, because obviously all of their attention will be going towards getting this operating system out the door in time for people to buy it. Will people want to buy this system once it comes out? Obviously. There's a reason why Microsoft has 90% of the share. For some reason, they have more marketability than Apple does. Even though Apple has been chipping away at that, and it has been very happy to know that I believe the numbers were 30% or 40% of people buying their Apple computers from the Apple stores were buying their first Macintosh. That means a lot of people are switching over because, again, Macintosh is superior on video editing, audio editing, and on Photoshop. Their Photoshop loads up so much faster. And I mean so much faster than anything that loads up on Microsoft. I'm sure it's probably because of the RAM. I know that. I only have 512 on mine at home. I know that before you say anything. But still, even a low-end Mac, chances are you're going to get Photoshop to start up a bit faster than it does on Microsoft. I hate it that my entire system is crippled for a couple of minutes whenever Photoshop starts loading because so many resources go towards that. Apple doesn't really have that problem too much. I like that about Apple. But again, there are flaws inside Macintosh computers. I'm not saying there aren't, because I'm not one of those people who magically believes that Macintoshes are saints and that Microsoft is the devil. Microsoft has its good points. So does Apple. Let's understand that. And I guess more user capabilities in Microsoft, I guess. It's got two buttons on its mouse instead of one. That's cool. Got a little scroll wheel on there, too. Wee, yay, scroll wheel. You can do that with Apple, too. But still, Microsoft has the share. Will its share go down if Vista keeps getting delayed? I would guarantee it, actually. I would guarantee that maybe it'll go down to about 85, 84%. Because if people run out of options, if people get bored of XP, which a lot of people are already, because XP's been around for 5 years now, you know XP inside and out. People want some change. They want a different OS. Apple's already working on their next OS, and I believe it's going to be revealed in the next couple of months or so, which is great for them. But they want some new things to fool around with. They want that new Windows Media Player. I don't know why they do, but they do. They want that new IE7. I don't know why they do, but they do. They want to see just what this brand new operating system is going to look like. If it keeps getting delayed, the anticipation will go out the window, and so will its sales. PlayStation 3 is going through that same problem. Whenever it gets delayed, I hear less and less of my friends saying, oh yeah, I can't wait to get a PlayStation 3, because they're getting sick of it. They're switching over to the Wii or to the Xbox 360, because you got to wait months and months and months for the PS3 to come out. If you got to wait months and months and months for the Vista to hit the streets, less and less people will care. But Microsoft will still be on top. Somehow Bill Gates just has that appeal that Jobs never had. I don't know, maybe his last name is cooler. Gates to Jobs? I don't know. The fact remains that Windows still beats Macintosh. It shouldn't be the case, but it is. But what are you going to do? Just go out there, buy yourself your Vista. I'm going to stick with my XP because I don't want all that security on there, because I'm a pirate. You know that. Yarr. No, I did not just start doing that for no reason at all, because that would make me kind of crazy. You remember that story that I talked about at the top of the show about Activision acquiring one of the best game licenses out there? Well, I guess I kind of just gave it away with that. That's right, Activision has stolen out from under EA. It's about time somebody stole something from EA. Well, I guess their workers did steal some money, as I mentioned last week. They have the Bond license. Now, EA started off kind of weak with their Bond games. The first couple of ones that came out were basically direct movie tie-ins, and they weren't exactly the best games in the world. Then they started coming out with games that were actually their own little Bond movies. They got Pierce Brosnan to do the voice for one of them. They got Sean Connery for the other one. They did one where you got to be a villain in GoldenEye Rogue Agent. They've had some innovative games, but now it's Activision's turn. And here is the news out of GameSpot.com. Number 2 publisher takes over spy film-inspired game license after arch-rival Electronic Arts ends agreement. Now holds PC, handheld, and console rights until, get ready for this, 2014. Wow, 8 years. That should be pretty cool. Since the late 1990s, Electronic Arts has held the license to publish games based on the James Bond film franchise. The results have been mixed on the current generation of consoles, as I mentioned. 2004's James Bond 007 Everything or Nothing garnered high praise and sold more than 1.3 million units in the U.S., according to the MPD Group. However, EA's four other Bond games, James Bond 007 and Agent Under Fire, James Bond 007 Nightfire, GoldenEye Rogue Agent, and From Russia with Love, have seen middling sales and reviews. In 2003, EA announced a deal with film distributor MGM to make James Bond games until 2009. The following year, MGM was bought by Sony, which now co-owns the James Bond license with the production company EON. Now, 3 years later, EA no longer holds the once coveted James Bond license. Today, Activision shocked the game industry by announcing that it had struck a deal with MGM and EON to publish James Bond games through 2014. The James Bond franchise creates tremendous global expansion opportunities for Activision, as it is one of the few game licenses that appeals equally to domestic and international consumers, said Mike Griffith, president and CEO of Activision Publishing. The deal is extensive and gives Activision worldwide rights to create video games for all current and next-generation consoles, PC, and handheld platforms based on the James Bond character. It includes both original games set in the Bond universe and games based on new films, such as the forthcoming Casino Royale. Royale will be the first film to feature Daniel Craig of Layer Cake and Munich in the role of Agent 007. and an update here, but while the deal is potentially lucrative, it does raise a number of questions, namely, how did Activision get the license to publish 007 titles? As it turned out, EA decided it didn't want to make them anymore. EA decided to conclude our agreement for the James Bond license, a rep told GameSpot. The current contract was set to expire in 2009. This was a good relationship with MGM, and it produced a lot of great games. So EA gave up the license. That's a bit surprising there. I guess, did they realize that it wasn't really profiting nearly as much as they expected it to? I mean, how often do you see EA, of all companies, pull out of a major deal like this? Not often. I mean, EA are the type of guys that go into your face and will not leave until they get what they want. I mean, just think about the NFL. EA has exclusive rights to make NFL games. That's amazing to me. To this day, that shocks me, okay? That you can't see any more NFL games unless they're by EA. Wow. EA is one of the largest companies out there when it comes to gaming. They just seem to get bigger and bigger every year. The Sims is such a cash cow for them, with the computer gaming at least. And the console version of The Sims does a great job for them too. 007 games were doing decently at best, but they really didn't have the storylines that were too appealing, I guess. They should have had more games that were just completely from the ground up. I mean, they shouldn't have even bothered with some of those movie games, because they were just literally just repeating what happened in the movie and not nearly as good, or with nearly as good special effects, because that's really hard to duplicate. But the fact remains that EA really doesn't give up things too easily. And now they give it up to their biggest arch rival, Activision? Something doesn't sit right here. I don't know exactly why they would do such a thing. I think Activision's going to do a decent job with James Bond license because, well, they want to put out damn good games off the start to try and get as many of those fans in their pocket right off the bat. Because, you know, James Bond games can be a gateway drug in one way or another. If you start buying games from one company that are really great, you're going to want to buy more and more games from it. If they make kick-ass James Bond games, people are going to look at the rest of their titles and say, huh, maybe I want this, maybe I want that. Huh, that looks kind of appealing to me. Oh my God, I never saw that before. That looks like it could be great. Why? Because it's by Activision. This is the sort of game franchise that appeals to a very, very large audience. That's what they said. International and domestic. People love James Bond. Now, are they going to go the route of EA and make more games with the voice of Sean Connery? Are they going to just stick with movie titles? Because as they said, Casino Royale, chances are, will be the first game under the Activision license. It's kind of interesting. I mean, I want to see the Casino Royale because I want to see how Daniel Craig does his 007. I really don't like the way that they kicked Pierce Brosnan off just because he was old. As they said, he was too old to play James Bond, which is crap. He's still pretty young, and he still played a decent James Bond. In fact, for me, he is the James Bond of James Bonds because he's the one that I grew up on. Sure, Sean Connery did an amazing job. Don't get me wrong. He is a fantastic, fantastic Bond, but, you know, for his time. I think Pierce Brosnan did a great job of bringing it into the 90s and the 2000s, or the 00s, or whatever you want to see. See, that's something that I have a problem with, too. Like, the 90s were the 90s. We're in the 00s, we're in the 00s, it's kind of confusing. But still, the fact remains, James Bond is with Activision now. Good for Activision, this could really, really help them out. Now, on the side of consoles, you ever wanted to make a phone call with your PSP in one way or another? You ever wanted to make a phone call with your DS? You probably haven't really thought of that too much, but well, now Vonage is going to give you some sort of opportunity to do so. And this is courtesy of Engadget.com. And I believe, as I take a look here, was this another David Price story? No, it was not. The Vista story was David Price, and the Mozilla patch was David Price. This is not David Price. Okay. This comes out of Engadget.com. Vonage prepping VoIP solutions for DS and PSP. Although neither device has a true VoIP option yet, UK tech site T3 is reporting that a source close to Vonage, i.e. a friend of a friend of a friend, has confirmed that the VoIP provider is developing Wi-Fi calling solutions for both the Sony PSP and Nintendo DS. We've known for a while that both systems were capable of implementing the old VoIP, But other than a random blog musing we reported on last year, this is the first indication we've seen of a major player making moves in this direction. Even for a rumor, the details here are pretty thin, such as how Vonage plans to actually implement VoIP in the disparate devices. The possibilities include a firmware update for the PSP and either DSpeak-like software or an Opera-like cartridge for the DS, or even a hint of when we can expect to see any products come to market. As you might expect, Vonage itself declined to comment on the matter when contacted by T3. So this is actually kind of interesting here because, well, a lot of people like to just carry around one object at once. You know, the PSP is a pretty light thing in the long run. I mean, sure, it's a bit heavier than some of the other handhelds out there. The DS, especially the DS Lite, is really, really light in your pocket. Now, if you're going to have the capability to basically just pop in your Vonage, okay, and go from there, well, that is a very, very good idea. I mean, when you think about it, Vonage has the name. I mean, I myself am not too much of a fan of Vonage only because it's pay, but plenty of people out there have heard of Vonage. Plenty of people out there, you know about it and have paid attention to it in the past. Vonage, they might have a chance here. They really do. Voice over IP is something that I am experimenting with now. I had that one episode of Geekspeak that I did over Gizmo, and I had the episode of Comic Timing, and Comic Timing in general will be done with Skype. Well, what if Skype gets out there and makes themselves something for the PSP? Or what if some homebrew goes out there and starts making Skype for the PSP? Because you know what? If this firmware does come out there that allows the PSP to use voice over IP, that's going to open up a brand new floodgates for everybody. Obviously, there'll be some sort of microphone add-on to this because that would make a lot more sense. And, well, you know what? Do it. I see no reason not to. Because, well, it might be a bit bulkier than a cell phone, but if people have a different opportunity, let's say you charge maybe $6 for Vonage, okay? I'm sure it'll be a much more than that, but if you only charge something like $6 or $7 for something along these lines, as opposed to like the $29.99 per month that you would pay with a cell phone, you might get some people to switch on over from their own cell phone providers and just switch over to their PSP, because they have that already. They're like, hey, this could kind of work. This could make sense. Now, the fact that Vonage isn't saying anything doesn't mean it's not going to happen, because, well, guess what? Dell didn't say anything about their Alienware deal until it actually happened. They said, no, of course not. We're not going to do anything along those lines. No, definitely. And then, like, the next week, oh, yeah, we did this. Oh, wow, fantastic. We totally, totally believed you when you said that you were not going to do anything along these lines. I don't know. I mean, for the DS, I think it would probably work better than them with Vonage, because I think having the dual screens for a VoIP call could actually be pretty beneficial. You know, have the numbers on the bottom, have your levels on the top, or have the amount of time you spent on the phone on the top. For the PSP, it could work. For the DS, I think it would work a bit better. But this could be really, really cool. I want to look into this, actually, because, well, it might give me a reason to actually get a portable console, because I'm not too much of a portable gamer. But, you know, if I have gaming plus phone plus everything else, and it's not called the N-Gage, ugh, God, that was terrible, it's going to give me a reason to buy it, especially if it's cheap, because, hell, cell phones can be damn expensive, especially if you use it often. So, good idea for Vonage. Now let's see if it's executed well. I think it will be. At least I hope it will. Well, I gave Windows its time. Well, I guess I'll give Apple its time, too. A couple of weeks ago, I reported a problem that Apple was having over its pricing plan for iTunes. How a lot of the companies wanted to have a tiered system where more popular songs would get maybe $1.59, while less popular songs you'd be able to get for 89 cents, and middle of the road you would still be able to get for the 99 cents that you can get stuff off iTunes with now. Well, Apple wanted to stick with their regular plan. Well, they won, Yay! Here is the report out of money.cnn.com. And here we go. Apple wins iTunes pricing battle. Four largest record companies defeated in behind-the-scenes battle to charge different prices for songs. Download still 99 cents, paper says. Apple Computers said it has renewed contracts with the four largest record companies, ensuring that songs will still be sold at 99 cents each, according to a news report Tuesday. The record companies had been pushing Apple to allow different prices for tracks, especially the ability to charge higher prices for new material from top-selling artists, said the Financial Times. The companies, Universal, Warner Music, EMI, and Sony BMG, were forced to accept Apple CEO Steve Jobs' pricing because the iTunes Music Store has so much influence over the U.S. download market, the report said. The iTunes Music Store accounts for 80% of paid downloads. The newspaper said that some labels were considering signing short-term contracts with Apple now, and then bringing up these issues again in the near future. Online music sales increased 194% last year to 352 million units, according to the report. Shares of Apple were at $69.60 before the markets open on Tuesday. I'm sort of happy about this because, well, you know what? When a song is 99 cents, it makes more sense to buy it, okay? Once it starts getting to around $1.50 or $2, then you're getting a bit too much there. And this is exactly what those four big companies wanted. They wanted to be able to charge the hell out of new stuff. Let's say, for example, Pearl Jam's new album. Let's say if on iTunes, instead of charging 99 cents for every song, each song was $1.20. So 13-track album, $1.20, you're running at about $16 or $17 there, which is more than what you would be paying if you were just buying it off of Amazon, for example, or things along those lines. 99 cents for a song, hey, that's still kind of reasonable, even though, well, I got my entire Pearl Jam album from pearljam.com and it included a free download in it, but what are you going to do? Still, 99 cents is reasonable. That's why people like it. That's why most of America gets their stuff on iTunes, because it's simple, damn it. Simple things. We go for simple things. Once it starts getting difficult, once you start seeing different prices for different songs, that's when people start questioning. That's when people start wondering, am I going to be able to get this for 99 cents? They go on there, damn it, it's $1.30. Well, forget that. And they don't even bother anymore. Sony, EMI, Universal, and Warner Music are under the watching eye of Apple, because they know, Apple knows just how much these companies need them right now, which is great for Apple. It really is. To be needed is fantastic. France, the whole France thing has been solved as well. They're not going to make them open up their copyright protection for other MP3 players, which is great for Apple. Not for the consumer, mind you, because, well, I would love to be able to buy stuff off the Apple store and play it on my Creative Zen without having to first make a CD and then burning it back onto my computer to get rid of said copyright protection. But that's another story for another time. The fact remains, Apple has been really, really lucky with its court cases lately. They won France, now they've won the big music companies. And again, without these big music companies, both Apple and the music companies would be screwing themselves. They'd be shooting themselves in the ass with a pellet gun, which hurts, trust me. It's something you really want to avoid. Because when you're 80% of the market, it's very, very hard to go out there and say, yeah, this is really cool, but I think I'm going to avoid it. And then you lose money. Both of them will lose so much money if they decide to part ways and go with someone different. Because Apple are the ones who know how to do the MP3 thing. Even if they're not actual MP3s, if maybe if they're MP4s. The fact remains, they know what they're doing. It's been proven again, and it will be proven time and time again after that. The iTunes store itself could use some work. I'm sure they're probably going to improve it sometime in the near future. But they've won here. Congratulations to Apple. Another lawsuit in the bag. What's up next for them? Are they going to decide to maybe sign some contracts with some of the movie companies to ensure that they can get movies for $2.99 or something along those lines? Because it would make so much more sense for them to have movies at a price along those lines than the insane price of $9.99 or $10.99 when you can just get a DVD for that price. The downloads are not nearly as good as they would be if they were coming from a group of people who got their DVDs and just burned it onto their computer. Apple wins again, but don't they always? Now, what I want to see them do next is actually get some of the market share away from Microsoft, but that's a story for another time, and hopefully that will indeed be what happens in the near future. We're just going to have to wait and see, folks. Isn't that the way life works? How often do I say that on the show? We're just going to have to wait and see. But guess what? We're just going to have to wait and see again. Big shock there. Big shock there. Nice dramatic music to do a comic book segment with. Oh, yeah, you gotta love it. All right, so obviously, you know that I'm a comic book nut by now. If you have not figured that out by the podcast, by the guest spot on Around Comics, and by everything else that I do that is comics related, well, then you must not catch on quickly. But one thing that I've covered time and time again on this show are the crossovers. And now that one of the major crossovers is over, Infinite Crisis, and now that Civil War is beginning here, there's only one thing that comes to mind. Is it all worth it? Is there really a point to all of these crossovers? Do these crossovers bring readers to the books, or are they just there for the sake of being there? That's the big question. Now, I really don't know the answer to this. A lot of people do get shied away from the idea that they're going to have to get maybe 6 or 7 books in order to get a complete run of what's going on in a title. I mean, I myself hate when a crossover is going on and I am a regular reader of a particular book and I cross over into that crossover squared, as you will, and the flow of the story is disrupted. That's usually what ends up happening. Hopefully, with She-Hulk, it will not happen because there's a major She-Hulk issue coming up that's going to tie into Civil War. I'm going to be following Civil War. I'm probably going to pick up Civil War Frontline as well. But there's one thing also about Civil War that gets me. Everybody's saying, oh, look how creative, look how innovative. It was done about, oh, maybe years ago. Yeah, that's pretty much it. With the JSA. Comic books are a cycle. Comic books are the medium where nothing has been done that hasn't been done before. Almost every single story out there, you can basically track just what's been done. Now it's time to do this story again. Now it's time to do the story where the government tries to take down the superheroes and tries to get them to either reveal their secret identity or have them stop being superheroes. This is what happens. Now they're going to be outlaws. In JSA, that's what happened before. Nothing is new here. With Infinite Crisis, Infinite Crisis was a direct sequel to Crisis on Infinite Earths. Because Crisis on Infinite Earths and Zero Hour and all those other crossovers didn't do the DC Comics universe justice. Crisis on Infinite Earths was a great groundwork. DC didn't follow it up. That's why Infinite Crisis needed to show up in the first place. Because without Infinite Crisis, all of the DC universe would be in turmoil right now. Nobody knew how to write the characters. Because everybody who came along had such a different take on each and every single character that everybody was wondering, who is this guy? Even Batman. Batman, one minute, would be completely paranoid. He'd hate everyone around him. And the next minute, he'd have Robin, he'd have Nightwing, he'd have Oracle. Everybody would be around him. Now, with 1 year later, you see a Batman that has indeed accepted the people around him, but that's because he had a year to think about what he's been doing, and that's why he's a different Batman now. It makes sense this way. Before, when all of a sudden he would just randomly change, it made no sense at all. The whole Catwoman thing in the Hush storyline that Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee did, made very little sense to me because, sure, they'd been having, you know, the on-again, off-again flirtation for a while, but for him to get to the point where he would reveal his secret identity to Catwoman, and this is a spoiler, I know, but, well, hey, Hush was ages ago, so, you know, that's the way it goes. Spoilers will come out every now and then, but I'm sure this won't really, this doesn't really spoil too much about that book, because I'm not spoiling why he did it, so there you go. But the point remains, the whole relationship with Catwoman came out of left field, and it's almost been swept under the rug entirely by writers since. Think of Chuck Austin on X-Men. Almost every single thing that Chuck Austin has done has been swept under the rug. What he did wasn't a crossover, though. When it's a crossover, it's very hard to sweep these things under the rug because you need to make them feel as if they meant something. Example, Our World's at War. For an entire year, Superman's logo changed. He had black on it to mourn the people who died. Within that year, almost every single person who died came back from the dead. Guy Gardner, he died in Our Worlds of War. Now he's back. What about Aquaman? He died in Our Worlds of War. He came back. Steel died in Our Worlds of War and came back. In fact, to this day, I don't even know how Steel came back, and yet he's there. Somebody's going to have to explain that to me someday because I really have absolutely no idea where John Henry Irons came from because I swore this dude was dead. This is what happens when you do too many crossovers because before you know it, so much has been done that you just forget your way. Has DC done this? In the past, yes. But now they use a crossover like Infinite Crisis to change all that because one good crossover can cancel out eight bad ones. Marvel Comics with their Civil War crossover right now. They're going to try and get rid of all of those 90s crossovers that meant absolutely nothing. Except for Operation Zero Tolerance, which I loved. Except for Age of Apocalypse, which was an alternate reality story in the first place. So you can't really count that. And I guess maybe the Infinity War, if you want to count that. Because there were instances of the Infinity War that I liked. And other than that, nah, no thanks. The Infinity Gauntlet, no thanks. It's just so much backstory that you've got to deal with. And that is what going into the archives and fleshing out these stories is all about. That is why crossovers are necessary. At the same time, they can convolute things until you have no idea what the hell you're reading anymore. With comic books today, I can pick up a title and know exactly what's going on, while the next time I pick it up, I'll be completely lost. I hope that 1 year later continues to do its job and give DC Comics a new look, a new edge that it simply did not have before. Because if it doesn't, we'll all be looking at DC and saying, you tried the crossover again and you failed. So far, so good with 1 year later. Let's see how 52 does. With Marvel, so far, so good for Civil War. I really enjoyed the first issue. I'd like to see if the crossovers in the other titles will matter here. Because with House of M, they didn't. And that was the problem with House of M. You would pick up House of M, and all of those side miniseries had nothing to do with the House of M book itself. I loved Spider-Man House of M. And yet, it has been brought up once as a throwaway in Son of M. That's it. You have to make things matter, you have to make things coherent, and you need to make things flow. Marvel, DC, learn from that, and you will have a good crossover. If not, well then you'll have another Day of Judgment, or another Secret Wars 482 on your hand. How many Secret Wars were there? A lot. Just, please, whatever you do in any of these crossovers that do happen in the near future, don't give any of them a mullet or a leather jacket, all right? Thank you, Marvel. I think you've learned your lesson from the Beyonder. All right, good. I'm glad we had this talk. We'll be right back. It's wind-up time here on Geek Speak, where we switch things over from the geek side of things to the sports side of things. And on today's grand spanking episode here, I'm going to talk some Mets. Yeah, that's right. Me, Ian, talking Mets. I know. Wow. How often does that happen? Well, I need to applaud the New York Mets right now, okay? It's not something I do on a regular basis, but, you know, half of my family are Mets fans, and the other half are Yankee fans, so I need to give the Mets their say every now and then. Congratulations to the New York Mets for being where they are in the NL East right now. They are in first place. They are exactly where Willie Randolph wanted them to be. They are at least 4 games ahead of the Atlanta Braves as of this very moment. Last year? Yeah, not so good. But they were getting there. You could see it. They just needed a couple more spots in their lineup that they could turn to on a regular basis. And you know what? They have those spots now. Carlos Delgado adds so much to the New York Mets. They should have had him last year. But the fact that they have him now at least means that, well, they get to reap the benefits of him this year. Wagner, been doing a decent job. He's had a couple of bad moments, like last night where he gave up a couple runs and they had to win in extra innings. But the fact is, a couple of years ago, when Armando Benitez used to blow a save and they'd go into extra innings, the Mets would lose. Well, this year, they're winning. That is a major change. This might be a sign of things to come for the Mets. This might be an opportunity. This might be exactly what they've needed for years. They have a group of individuals they can count on, that they can trust, that they can turn to in situations that are difficult. Their bullpen still needs a little bit of work, but it really hasn't shown too many cracks yet. Let's see how they are maybe mid-season or a little bit after that, but so far so good for the New York Mets. I can't say anything bad about them. They might need to get rid of Kaz Matsui, although he's been doing a decent job lately. He's been doing a much better job than I thought he would. He's finally catching fire. Let's see how long that lasts, though, because I still think the Mets got the wrong Matsui. Imagine if they would have had Hideki. Speaking of Hideki Matsui, the Yankees also doing pretty good. They're around first place. They're in, you know, second to first place. I believe right now they are indeed in first place. They won last night in extra innings. But the best thing was that it wasn't because of anything like a blown save like what the Mets had. Great pitching by Jared Wright. Yeah, I just said that. Great pitching by Jared Wright, a guy who I usually hate. Okay, a guy that last year was the bane of my very existence. I just couldn't stand the dude. And, well, now he's doing good. So what am I going to do here? Yankees have too many good pitchers, which means come the middle of the season, come the All-Star break, they might have some trading opportunities to make if they want to better themselves even farther. The Mets might have that opportunity as well. New York baseball is looking damn good right now, and I am feeling good because of that. Everywhere else, on the other hand, even the Red Sox are doing good, which, I can live with for now. But let's see how they hold up at the end of the year. Let's see if their pitching holds up, because David Wells is already hurt. I'm sure Curt Schilling will get hurt at one point. And then let's see how those Red Sox are doing. Come on. How could it be a sports rant? How could it be a baseball rant without me at least ragging on the Red Sox once? I can respect those New York Mets, but the Red Sox, yeah, still kind of don't like them. And you're really, really surprised when I'm saying that, I'm sure. No, you're not. I'm a Yankee fan. You all know that. That was the windup. Now here's the pitch. Every single Monday here on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, at least for one more Monday and possibly two more after that, as this semester is almost over, but I will be finishing it up. Probably will have the show at least at one point during the summer. I'll let you guys know about that. You can join me, Ian Levinstein, along with Jason Green, Joey Maggs, the ghost of Michael Hornstein, the ghost of Infinite Crisis. That 7-issue series is completely over now. Watch those changes come. And the ghost of Road to Civil War, as Civil War is now underway, on the sporting goods. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those brand spanking new forums, completely redesigned, over at speakgeekspeak.com/forums. And it's a brand new month over at Podcast Alley. So if you please, vote for GeekSpeak at Podcast Alley. A link to Podcast Alley is in the show notes and at the main page. Also, don't forget to check out Comic Timing at speakgeekspeak.com/comic timing. Brand new podcast, myself, Toby Cook, and David Price talking comics time after time on Comic Timing. I want to thank the Pod Show PodSafe Network for the music on today's show at music.podshow.com. I want to thank Anamanaguchi for his lovely, lovely track. You can find his music over at myspace.com/Anamanaguchi. And I want to thank Deluxe, Jeffrey Tosser, Pixie Tricks, Shonen Samurai, and Zircon for my opening and closing theme. You can find their stuff and more over at ocremix.org. Another episode of Geek Speak over and done with. I'm Ian Levenstein. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. I will see you next Thursday for some more Geek Speak. Join me, why don't you? News portion, portion was a word, that'd be fantastic, relates to the Firefox hand, to the Firefox handles. Well, I'm losing my voice. And Japan. How did the word Japan get in my head? If this that keeps getting relayed. Relayed, well. After archival, after arch rival, It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.